This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. All right, this is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson. If this is the very first time that you've been listening to us, you got some catching up to do. I've done like 1,000 episodes. So I do have a couple people, believe it or not, that have listened to every episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles. And kudos to them. That's a big take. Following that many years or binge listening for that many years or whatever. But, so if you've done that, thank you very much. Today's guest, Mr. Doug Green. Doug, how are we doing, dude?
I'm well. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, man. Doing good. I gotta share some. How old are you by the way?
39.
39. Okay. So you're getting into it. You're just getting into it. So I've had this knee replacement surgery and I've been out of it. Like I can't do, you know, you can't do too much. My knee's starting to feel better and I know I need to get back on the health train, on the moving around, the working out train. And so like it's been 15 weeks, right? So leading up to the surgery, I wasn't doing anything because of my knee pain. I had the surgery, whatever. 12 weeks of not doing anything. And so last night I went to the gym and I did like this full body workout and I feel like I want to die right now. I feel like I've never worked out before in my life and my shoulders and knees and back and muscles and just like even my head, like my brain hurts, I think for some reason, but, so I feel like shit today. Sore. I'm sore and I'm old and I'm complaining.
I get it. I spent years wrestling and so I have shoulder and elbow issues and I've got something going on with my jaw elbow and I'm afraid to go get it checked out just because like we're getting into that prep and shooting, you know, the bow a lot. Yeah. I'm afraid it's going to be like August and then you're like, well, let's go check it out.
Right. Right. And then they're going to tell you something like, nope. Can't do it. You know, we really suggest you shoot a crossbow this year. Yeah. And then all your friends will make fun of you.
Oh, absolutely.
So there's that. Yeah, dude, I've been having this. I'm just calling it right now. This will be the first year where I'm dumping down underneath 70 pounds for a draw. Right. I think I'm just going to bump it down to 65 and just accept the fact that I'm not like my shoulder, my left shoulder, my left elbow, and that's my bow hand are just not like just the continuing shooting of that all summer long. I don't know. Plus I'm going to go get a shot, another cortisone shot in my shoulder, which will help a little bit. And like me shooting reps, but I just feel like I'm past the point of being tough. And I'm just going to, or like, oh, dude, I shoot 70. I'm okay with shooting 65 now. I'm bumping down.
So you're not going to be one of those guys that gets one of the 90-pound bows that are just dropping?
No. But I tell you what, I did shoot 2 years in a row. Back in the day when I was shooting a couple of elite bows, they were some of the first bows to the market that were offering 80-pound limbs. And this would have been like 10 years ago, maybe. And I got 80 pound limbs and I was shooting 80 pounds. I'll tell you this, dude, it was a workout to shoot 20 arrows, especially if you weren't like consistently doing it. And so starting out going from 70 to 80 pound limbs, holy shit, dude, I can remember like being exhausted after that. And then at the end of the summer, getting ready, I got out of the shower one day, I was looking in the mirror and my back on my right side that was doing all of the drawing was noticeably bigger than my left side. So, but I will say this, I just talked to a guy about this. I shot this doe, mature doe, quartering away. I went through, dude, I knocked the shit out of her with that. I was shooting a fixed blade at the time, because I wanted the same arrow set up for an elk hunt that year as well. And so I went elk hunting and then I kept the same arrow weight and everything, that complete setup for the deer season. And that doe hit the dirt. Like, I knocked her to the ground. Arrow went through her front side shoulder. Like, dude, just smoked her. And that was cool, but just the wear and tear on the shoulder by the end of the season, I was like, nah, I think I'll go back down to 70.
Yeah. We were shooting bows last weekend here at a little 3D range, and one of my buddies started to struggle halfway through, and he's like, I might back it down to like 62.
Yeah.
And we started giving him a hard time, you know.
Yeah. Oh, right, that's what guys do. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So he's a huge pussy, right? Like,
yeah, mid 40s. He's peaked. It's, yeah.
1 foot in the grave. You're going downhill. Like, don't worry about it, but yeah. Yeah. Okay. We got a little bit to talk about. We had you on, was the Hunting Gear podcast. Yeah. A couple weeks ago. Thank you for doing that, by the way. If you want to go listen to that episode, you can go check out the Hunting Gear podcast that Doug here was on. But we're going to talk a little bit today about like hunting culture and hunting, the camp culture and things like that. And so I want to get into that. But before we do, I got to send a huge shout out to all of the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles. All right. So if you're looking for a broadhead that destroys everything it touches, go check out wasparchery.com. I do have a discount code NFC20 for 20% off. If you're looking for, in my opinion, not just the best product, but the best people in the optics game, go check out vortexoptics.com. They have rangefinders, rifle scopes, binoculars, spotting scopes, all the accessories you need for your red dots and your sidearms and things like that. Vortexoptics.com, amazing company. Next on the list is Code Blue Scents. Whether you're looking for real or synthetic deer urine, scent elimination products, my favorite, the Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kit, go check out CodeBlueScents.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. And then next on the list is Reveal Trail Cameras. It's that time of year, dude. Like, I don't know about you, Doug, but I am getting ready this week. I'm actually traveling to Indiana tomorrow. I leave to go to Westfield, north of Indianapolis, for a wrestling tournament. And I'll be there like Tuesday night through Thursday. And my daughter's in a tournament, so I'll be there doing that. Outside of that, it's trail camera season. So the following week, I'm going to be going up. I'm going to be hanging trail cameras. I'm making it a priority. I'm going, maybe taking the boys with me, and then go knock that out. And hopefully I got some big dogs on camera that I want to chase this year. So, but that's the beauty of Reveal is you scan a QR code on the camera, make sure the batteries are in it, and you have a fully functioning cell cam. Right. Along with the app, the app would be like the Google Play Store or wherever you download your apps, get the Reveal app and then check out all the new functionality there as well. So go to tacticam.com/cameras and go check out the cameras. All right, Doug, in one of our conversations we've had earlier, you were talking about, you just kind of mentioned like this hunting camp culture where it's people together coming together to hunt. Talk to me a little bit about what that means to you. What does hunting camp culture mean to you?
It's one of my favorite parts of deer hunting. It started when I was a kid. My dad didn't hunt. I had one of my friends growing up and his dad would take me to their hunting camp. They had like a pop-up trailer. So we'd go down south and I was just able to, you know, hang out, camp with them. I would go sit with a buddy on a ground blind. And I was probably the worst hunting partner at the time because I thought I was helping by making like bird noises and stuff, not realizing I was probably running off every year in the area. You know, you're making dove noises and there's no doves around.
Wait a second. I just envision this kid sitting in the woods being like, that's what you were doing, yep. Thinking yep. You were part of.
I didn't, you know, I'm 8, 9 years old, tagging along. Hey, dude, with
I love it. Wasn't hunting. I love it.
And somehow he didn't kill me. He didn't run me off. We, you know, stayed friends.
Yep.
But at night, we'd sit around the campfire. We would roast hot dogs, marshmallows. We'd do dumb young boy stuff, like throw a metal gas can in the fire and see what happens.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And then I kind of got out of hunting. I didn't have anybody, you know, close to me who was still in it. And then after college, I got that bug again. I got back in it on my own. Mm-hmm. I got into a group of buddies who were very like-minded. Mm-hmm. We think about it 24/7, 365. It's always on our mind. You know, think about putting the cameras out. We're going in a couple of weeks. I've been like having to hold myself back from going in the woods too much and just blowing up those spots.
Yeah.
Just that brotherhood, though.
This is something that I like hearing about, right? I have never been a part. I'm like a solo hunter, man. I've never been a part of your typical deer camp, right? I would say the closest thing that I have to that is me and another guy going to South Dakota to go hunt mule deer. And then we kind of both go our separate ways and then we come back together at night. Sometimes we'll take a truck out together and we'll go and chase some mule deer together. But outside of that, I've never been a part of a continuous camp where a group of guys meets up every single year and does the same thing. In this, I don't know, this culture that we live in where we have a, I don't even know how to put it, like a very big emphasis on antler size. And what I think has happened over the course of the years is that we have focused so much on antlers that, you know, I can't shoot a big buck if my buddy shoots a big buck. And we've been so self-centered in our, in the take, in the goal, that it may be affecting some of the actual culture in which we go out and just have this togetherness and this fellowship and things like that. Have you noticed that in the hunting community around where you're at?
It's definitely out there. A lot of times it's just finding those like-minded people. We've got a good core, you know, good group of people that have been around for a while. It helps that we have enough acreage to get, you know, 7, 8 guys on the same parcel. We're not stepping on each other. There's plenty of stands. We have running gun sets. We have one guy who's killed 2 absolute slammers the last 2 years. And another one of our buddies, you would think he would shot it. Like, he's so happy for everybody every time they kill a deer. Big, small, doe, buck, you would think that he's in the stand or he's like their brother.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, that's so much fun. Like, I get it. Guys going out by themselves, maybe it's public, maybe it's private. You call a buddy up and you, they help you drag it out. Right. But that's not necessarily like this, the deer camp culture, right? Where, hey, dude, what are you bringing today? I'm bringing the beans and the pork chops, and I'm bringing the, you know, I got a 30 pack on ice already, and that kind of conversation. So, why do you guys make this a priority every year?
It makes it more fun for us. You know, it reminds us of the younger days. You know, those deer camps as a kid with other people, with parents, you know, uncles, cousins, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It makes it more enjoyable. You know, you're not just sitting in the tent at night by yourself, twiddling your thumbs. You can tell some stories. You can BF. A lot of stories probably can't be repeated. or probably shouldn't be repeated. Just a lot of memories. Right. I've got pictures of lots of deer drags. We've taken, you know, deer out on baby strollers because we had no better way to get them out. You know, the kids outgrow the baby stroller, and instead of dragging them, know, a mile plus, we get the jogger with the big tires on it, and it just makes it easier to get out. We've had guys sleep under trucks, and you know, years ago, and we're still busting their chops for them. Just a lot of those stories, you know, that they're always there for you, good, bad, and different, hard times. It just makes it so much more enjoyable.
Yeah. How does that get passed down to the next generation then?
So right now we're kind of doing that with our group. There's three kids. Kids, you know, still in school, high school, junior high, even elementary school. And we just loop them in on that. You know, every firearm season, we do a deer camp meal. Everybody kind of pitches in, you know, main course, sides, this, that, and the other. We just bring the kids in. You know, they see the camaraderie, the stories. You know, it's not just a bunch of custom, you know, scratching our bellies, farting, burping, stuff like that. But it, you know, still kid appropriate, and just making them a part of it. You know, joking around, including them. You know, they're not just sitting with the adults; they're included.
Yeah. Yeah. And then do you see, have you been doing this camp culture, this deer culture thing long enough to where you're starting to see, like, because you talk about Michigan, you talk about especially Wisconsin, maybe Minnesota, they go north, right? They go north to the cabin and then they all gather at the cabin and you have this generations of this where great grandpa's dead, but he started it, right? Then grandpa came in and now dad took it over because grandpa's too old, but he still shows up. He doesn't hunt anymore. Dad's still there. He's taking control. And then you know, his son's there with his boy who's now 13 years old. And so you have this like four or five generations. Have you guys hit that point yet in your kind of camp?
Definitely. One of the younger guys, his dad's on the lease. We got him on there. And so he, 2 years ago, they went to a family member's for opening firearm. Mm-hmm. Still had success. They still had a good time, you know, there with family. But when he left, he talked to his dad. He was like, "Hey, can we do deer camp next year?" Which is what we call our gathering, you know, our camping, our hanging out is deer camp. And he was like, "Yeah, you know, sure." And so he was excited to come down the next year and just be part of it. You know, he gives us a hard time because, you know, we're old guys and he's a young guy who knows everything. And we give him a hard time because he can't, you know, go in places yet. So yeah, it's a good
gotcha. How do you guys do that? Like, what's the focus? Is the focus on being together and hanging with the bros, or is the focus on going and killing the deer? Like, how are you guys doing deer drives together? Are you going your separate ways and then meeting back at camp and sharing the stories, or how does that work?
So we don't do deer drives where we're at. We definitely share information though, or try to, you know, the best we can. If somebody's tagged out, we'll usually go sit with somebody else. They may try and, you know, help them out, film, you know, kind of make it that camp camaraderie again. But get up in the morning, everybody kind of talks, oh, you know, where are you going? We kind of go out. Some people come back midday. Some people do all day sits. And then in the evening, it's typically like we're walking out and everybody's like, Mexican food. And so we usually meet up at the Mexican restaurant. That's kind of our place if we're not doing a camp meal or something like that. We recap, we hang out, sometimes stay up way too late. But it's just good to hang out, BS, talk about. Sometimes it's just life. Sometimes it's what you're seeing. You help guys troubleshoot, you know, trying to get on a deer sometimes. But sometimes it's just good to have that another person there to bounce ideas off of.
Yeah. Yeah. And so is at the end of the day, though, like, what's it about? Is it about the deer or is it about the people?
It's about the people. I mean, we all love chasing deer.
Yeah.
You know, no matter the size. It's definitely about the people hanging out, telling the stories. We could all get skunked for the season, but we know we had a good season and had fun because we all got to hang out with each other and see each other.
Yeah. Okay. What about how many years has this been going on? And then do you have any kind of fun traditions that you do?
So it started like 10 years ago, started real small, and it's kind of grown. Our base group was just two or three people. that really started it, and we're doing a meal and everything. And then now it's like families come over, spouses come down for the firearm opener meal. Mm-hmm. And so we hang out, we have that meal. As far as tradition, I've gotten pretty good at fixing venison different ways. And so one of the guys calls it Doug's meat. Just the way I've got a rub that I found in a cookbook. It was actually meant for beef, and I changed it up a little bit and use it on venison, and take like a venison roast, sear it, throw it in the oven, just about medium rare. And it's so good. And you do a little au jus with it.
Yeah.
There's kind of the course. Sometimes we like to play pranks or whatnot. We've done the cold water in a cup. And then the big one is just resharing stories.
The cold water on the cup above the door, so when they open it up, it falls on their head?
We've done that before. We've just straight up thrown cold water on people, hoping they cool themselves.
Love it. So do you guys actually have a camp where everybody sleeps at, or pull trailers up or something like that?
So this year we're getting bougie, and one of the guys bought a pull behind camper. Mm-hmm. But otherwise it's been like a tent, a Cabela's 3 or 4 season tent. If it's cold, we got a wood stove. Couple years we crashed in one of the guys' basement. He does live down there close enough where we've crashed in his basement. But yeah, we've done everything from tent camping to, for a while we had like truck setups, camper shells, and we would mm-hmm. sleep in the back of those.
So it seems like it's been evolving every single year to get a little bit more comfortable. This summer, America turns 250 years old, and there's no better way to celebrate than getting outside and exploring this great nation. One way to do that is to rent a camper or RV from Outdoorsy. Outdoorsy is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the U.S., making it easy for anyone over 21 to rent an RV or camper without owning one. With Outdoorsy, you can drive it yourself, tow it, or even have it delivered and fully set up at your destination. With comprehensive insurance, 24/7 customer support, and roadside assistance, Outdoorsy gives you the peace of mind you need when on the road. Outdoorsy is even the perfect option for your next out-of-state hunting or fishing trip. Right now, my listeners can have all service fees removed from their bookings in 2026 with code NFC at Outdoorsy.com. That's Outdoorsy.com, and use code NFC at checkout to remove your service fees. Well, you know, more traditions are put into place. You have, meals being organized. Everybody in that group is really looking forward to it every single year.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. For a while, we did have a deer camp trophy. It went to just the biggest deer taken that year. It didn't matter if you were the only one and it was 100 inches, or if one of the guys won it back-to-back years with 150-inch deer. Just kind of make it fun. A little bit of a challenge, a little bit of bragging rights. We do like to bust each other's chops.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the fun part of all of this. And to be honest with you, that's the thing that I hear people talking about, and they're like, hey, why don't you come to deer camp, or I got to go to deer camp this year. And I think a lot of it has to do, with I've put so much of my energy into the rut and bow hunting. And that's such like an individual thing. As opposed to, around where I'm at, it's just like groups of guys getting together, doing like multiple deer drives throughout the day, maybe a couple in the, a couple in the morning, and then right away in the morning, they come back to wherever they're at. Usually it's some guy's machine shed, and then they'll have, their meal, they'll hang out, and then two things happen. One, they'll go on an afternoon deer drive, or then they go and sit in the afternoon. They don't do deer drives. They just sit in the afternoon and wait for deer to come by. But I've never been a part of that. And I really do feel like that would be something that I would enjoy and my kids would enjoy. Out of curiosity, is this a kind of a male dominated thing, or do you have women or young daughters involved in this as well?
there's women involved. Like my wife will show up with my son. She doesn't hunt though.
Yeah.
One of the other spouses, you know, hangs out, and there's a lot of judgment from them. Not always a safe space when they're around and they hear us telling stories and get rolling and going.
Yeah.
But it's still a good time. They enjoy it. They enjoy the meal.
Yeah.
Everyone's included.
Yeah. Everyone's included. I like that. I like that. What's your favorite part of deer camp every year?
I like the stories. Mm-hmm. Even if we've told them 100 times, just everybody laughing, getting together. We do like group deer drag outs. If somebody gets one, whether it's a doe or a buck, we always know people are there to help. And then even the stories with that, this deer right here.
Yep.
If you can tell, he's kind of funky. The one
yep.
side,
yep.
he had broken his skull 2 years before. Like literally took a chunk of his skull out with his antler.
Yeah.
And a couple of us saw him in the tree. He did the same thing the next year. So last year, and then in 2025, I was actually getting down to come home on a Monday. My wife needed me home. Our son was home from school. And I had gotten down. I'm walking up the trail, and I call her. I'm like, hey, I'm down. I just got to walk back to camp, and then I'm going to drive home. And I hang up the phone from her, and I take like 5 more steps, and I hear something, and I look over. And he's like walking right at me at a jog, like I'm a doe. And so I pull my rifle off my shoulder, and we both kind of look at each other, and I'm like, what deer is this? And we're kind of looking at each other, and he's like, you're not what I want. So he goes to like walk around me, and I'm like, I know what deer that is. So like 15 yards, I pull up and shoot him, and he runs 20 yards, drops dead. And I give him a minute, and I walk over and look at him, and I'm like, yep, that's the deer that broke his skull. He's got a real thick, and it's even gotten bigger, like piece of skull replacement.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably the biggest body deer I've ever shot. Field dressed, he was like 240.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so I called a buddy and I'm like, hey, I'm supposed to be getting home. Can you come help me with this? And he's like, I'm on my way. I'll meet you at camp. And so I walk back to camp and get the side by side. He meets me there. And on the way, I call my wife. And I'm like, hey, I might be a little bit later. Not too much, though. I just shot a deer. Tyson's on his way to help me get him out. And her response was, of course you did.
Yeah.
And then trying to get that deer up in the side by side, trying to avoid the tarsal glands, you know, because they're nasty that time of year, mid-November.
Yeah.
We're struggling to get him in so much. He has to grab the tarsal gland because it starts to slip. And then he has to put his belly on him to keep him from sliding down. And when he does that, he hits the deer bladder and down his leg, this deer pees. And it was the funniest thing afterwards. And he's a veterinarian, and he has a weak stomach for deer stents, and he gagged the whole way back to camp.
I got it. Hey, dude, I was, what year was this? I'm trying to think. I asked a buddy to help me drag a deer out who he was not a deer hunter. And so he had never seen anybody gut a deer before. So before we drug him into the truck, I was gutting him, and I could hear him. He's like, I'm going to go piss. But he was like, he was like gagging because of the, you know, the gut smell. And I just was laughing my ass off at that. But, what do you think it takes? If people listen to this and go, dude, I want that. I want a deer camp type culture every year or an event. How do you start one? How would you suggest starting one? How did you guys start yours?
I just flat out asked. Started asking the guys because I remember that gathering feeling when I was a kid, the fun we had. I mean, the stories that I still remember from that, and kind of how it's impacted me and the brotherhood that I have with people and just wanting to hang out and have a good time. And so I just brought it up, and it started off as just one meal. And I was like, hey, do you guys want to do a potluck? Do you guys want to do this? We can prep stuff at home. We've got the campfire. You know, we can do whatever to warm up food. And it started from there and just evolved and got bigger. Now neighbors show up sometimes and, you know, tell stories. What have you seen? Different crazy stories throughout the year. And sometimes it's just having the balls to say, hey, do you guys want to hang out?
Yeah. Yeah. What do the kids say about it? I mean, because ultimately, at some point, they're going to have to be excited enough about this tradition to keep it going, right? Do you, with all the stuff that we've talked about, how in the past, and what I mean by we, I mean this podcast, we talk about, you know, how a lot of people feel deer has been antler focused, or how easy it is with the technology, or the lack of access and things like that. What are the next generation saying about deer camp? Do they find it exciting enough to want to continue it?
Ours are excited. They're included, so they like that. And sometimes you remember their kid, you know, they're younger.
Yeah.
And when I was that age, you just want to kind of be included. You want somebody to show some interest, you know, in you or what you get excited about. One of the little girls is still new in her deer hunting experience. And so just when she goes out and sees deer, you know, the mommy deer came in with the baby deer and we didn't shoot it because we wanted her to live. And you just get excited. Oh, that's so cool. I haven't seen any little one. What was it like? You know, and then they tell their story, you know, for 10 minutes.
Yeah. That's impactful for them, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And so obviously, you know, like for me, I hunted and then I stepped away for basically the last 2 years of high school sports and then a majority of college. I really didn't do it as much. I mean, I still did when I came home for like a break or something like that, but I never really got into it too terribly much. How do you think people maintain this? Like, how do you think a deer camp continues to go generation to generation every single year? Just from a, like, does it take one person to just like be on it and take control like what you did? Or is this like a group of people needed to make it happen?
Sometimes it's like a family reunion, I feel like. Sometimes there's a group, there's a good core that no matter if somebody's out that year, they can keep it going. Sometimes they just have that one steady rock that pushes it forward. Hey, this is when it is.
Yeah, almost like a family potluck where you got some people who they bring the brisket and they bring the pulled pork that takes hours to prepare, the deviled eggs, all that. And then you have the family member that brings a bag of chips and a 2-liter bottle of pop, right? Like,
yeah,
you got guys like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's fine. You know, they're there, they're contributing, they're hanging out. Some years it's smaller. You know, you have kids graduating high school, going off to college, you know, Thanksgiving gatherings. And sometimes we have 10, 12, 15 people.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Do you think that the hunting community in a whole needs more of this?
I think so. The direction some things are going, where it's chasing the big buck, they don't want to share anything real secretive.
Yeah.
Just even if you don't want to share what you got, just getting together, tell them those stories, passing along the trend, just, you know, tradition. The hunting community is aging. We need to get some younger folks in there to continue to pass this along, keep access open. I'm always excited when somebody gets more access, even if I'm not on it, just because it keeps those lines open for the next generation.
Yeah. What do you think is the biggest threat to this camp culture and like the destruction of, I don't want to say destruction, but like the deterioration of camp culture? Like, what are some of the biggest threats you think?
Probably personality. If you can't be happy for somebody else or, not make it all about you, you got to remember the group. You got to have a group mentality.
Mm-hmm.
For that, just for continuing on in general, you know, if you look at some of those long-term deer camps, you know, those guys in Michigan, they're not mad because, you know, Uncle Bubba shot the big buck on the property. They're happy. They're helping him drag it out. They're passing along that story. They're patting him on the back. The beers around campfire that night are all about him.
Yeah.
And that's what's got to continue. You can't have everybody wanting to be a big buck killer and not wanting to talk, not wanting to share. You got to put everybody else above yourself sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's how an event like this continues to, I don't know, be pulled off, right? People have to come together. They have to share hunting locations. They have to be selfless. They have to want to do it for the group and not for the deer itself, even though we're here for the deer and we want to hunt, but it's not, it's crazy. It's like, let's go do deer camp, but it's not about the deer. You just call it deer camp.
Yeah, the deer's the reason, you know, for the gathering. And I can be competitive and I want to kill a good deer, you know, good mature deer every year, but I can't not talk to a buddy because he killed, you know, the biggest mature deer on the property.
Yeah.
It ruined deer camp. It makes it less fun. Then you start getting secretive and don't want to tell the other guys. It makes it less fun. I've been a part of that too.
Yeah.
And it's just not fun.
Is this deer camp a gun season tradition, or do you guys carry that over into archery as well?
So it's an archery as well. The biggest gatherings during firearm.
Okay.
But yeah, the real hardcore hunters, you know, the guys that just love deer hunt were there during archery season. That's typically when we have, you know, our Mexican food nights and stuff like that. Just gathering around, having a couple bush lights in somebody's garage.
Gotcha. So really, really what this is just, I mean, this sounds like it's a little bit more than deer camp. It seems like, yes, you do have your gun season deer camp, but it also seems like you guys are a fairly tight knit group of dudes who are just love deer hunting.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And so when you are doing your archery hunting, is that like a thing where you are going and, let's see, you guys go out on your own throughout the day, you're going to your own properties and your own hunt, and then you come back together at the end and share that story?
Typically, we've got a big chunk of property that we can all hunt together.
Okay. So you have a lease, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I got to go shut a window real quick because I got the entire neighborhood outside in my driveway right now. But give me 1 second. And for all of you, this is the perfect time as I go and tell my kids to shut up. I left my window open and because it's cool outside this morning. And so now I'm reaping the rewards of that decision. So, this would be a perfect time to maybe think about whether or not you could pull something like this off this upcoming year, because I kind of want to do it. When I get back, I do want to talk about some of the limitations here. So give me one sec. You ever been to like a 4th of July parade and you see the Shriners? They're all like driving in a circle, you know, they'll drive in the parades and then they drive in a little circle in their little mini cars. You ever seen that?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what my kids are doing outside. They're all like, there's 10 of them just in a circle, riding their bikes in a circle. I thought that was funny. Anyway, in order for this to pull off though, you guys have a lease, right?
We do, yes.
Yeah, and how many acres are in that lease?
We have 600 acres on the lease, and then there's two neighbors. One's got around 100, and the other has like 80.
Okay.
And they hunt.
Gotcha. All right, and they're involved as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so does this work for you if you don't have a lease?
In this setup, it's probably a little different. I mean, guys can make it work if you have access to, I mean, even on public, we've had a mini deer camp when we went to Kentucky last year.
Mm-hmm.
It was just at an Airbnb. I'm sure if the Airbnb host knew that we were, you know, butchering and skinning deer off his deck, he'd be less thrilled, but we kept it clean. We took everything out,
right,
handled it the way we were supposed to. But even then, we've got stories from that, you know, helping each other butcher deer on the back deck, waking up and finding out one of the guys sleeps butt naked on top of the sheets. And we really didn't want to find that out.
Holy shit. That's real. Wow. Wow. That would be, that would be pretty weird. Going and looking at a, you know, waking up on and your alarm goes off in the morning and you look over and there's some dude's ass just bare right out in front of everything. Yeah. That's hilarious.
You know, it's never a good story between guys when they say, hey, come look at this.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's trickling up in the morning and we're in the kitchen having the coffee and two of the guys were sharing rooms and Rob walked out and he goes, hey, come check this out. And I hesitate because I'm like, nope, I don't know what this is.
You already know it's something bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's still a story that lives.
Yeah. Yeah. I see how that would work. The thing that I feel is a real big limiting, limiting is the access. Like, I don't have anywhere where I could pull a group of guys to come hunt. I can't, like, back in the day, it'd just be like, yeah, dude, come hunt where I hunt. And the landowner is usually cool with it. Now there's already a lot of people on these farms, or the farm isn't big enough to do deer drives, or the farm isn't big enough to like pull six dudes on it and then shoot, everybody shoots a buck, right? Or everybody shoots a deer, right? Then you would look at that and go, oh, man, next year that actually might impact the amount of deer or good bucks on the farm, right? So at some point, you have to say to yourself, and this is just me thinking out loud at this point, at some point you have to go, what are you in this for, right? Are you in it for big antlers, or are you in it for the camaraderie to pass on the, you know, to the next generation? Because at some point, like my boy is going to want to shoot some bucks, and I'm not going to tell him, no, you're not going to shoot that buck. Dude, my boy, whenever I take him hunting, he's got green light on any animal he wants to shoot. Well, any deer he wants to shoot, right? And so he wants to shoot a 2-year-old 90-incher. Dude, go for it. You shoot whatever makes you happy. And I'm all for that. Like, I also know that that 2-year-old's not going to turn into a 3-year-old who's not going to turn into a 4-year-old. And therefore, I'm going to have that deer not be on the farm anymore. And so, I don't know. I feel like at some point, unless you hunt on highly managed ground, you have to be selfless and you have to say to yourself, what do you want? If I want this community, then I have to be willing to give up something that I know, whether that's age class or antler size, or, you know, or what I think a lot of people really enjoy is the, I have this to myself, right? Like, I have this chunk of land to myself, but in order for me to have this camp culture, I got to give it up. I got to bring other people on to this property that I hunt. And I don't think a lot of people are ready for that.
Yeah. We've come to terms, at least most of us, that there's 8 of us on this chunk, plus some of the neighbors that we're friendly with. There's so many mature deer in the woods.
Yeah.
You know, the kids, just like your kids, have free reins to shoot, you know, whatever. You know, the older guys, most of us are looking for at least a certain age deer. Mm-hmm. You know, we want it to be mature, 4.5, 5.5, you know, plus. With the understanding that we may not always shoot a buck. There will be years that we don't. We like it better when somebody in our group shoots one compared to one of the neighbors who is, you know, less friendly. But I understand that going into this fall, there's going to be 5 or 6 mature deer, you know, that we can really get into, and not everybody can shoot one, and I'm okay with that. You know, if I wanted to shoot a 2.5, 3.5-year-old deer, I could. I typically watch them move through. It's fun to watch them move and learn from that. And hopefully the kids, you know, at some point will and not want to shoot, you know, the first thing that walks by.
So is this, this group that you have that hunts this ground, is there a conversation that is had from you, like, hey, listen, we cannot shoot this deer. Like, we're not shooting 3-year-olds this year, or here are the hitless bucks that are on this property right now. And then do you guys come together, say pass, no pass? How's that work?
So when people come in, we talk about trying to have that age structure. Mm-hmm. You know, we try not to shoot anything below 4.5, unless it's just, you know, a monster that really gets you going. That's one of the reasons why we run trail cameras like we do. So mm-hmm. We kind of know what's there. We can build, you know, kind of that, we don't call it a hit list, just kind of a mature deer list, you know, a target list. So that we know it's there. We try and have those conversations. Most people are on board. We have a couple guys who have never shot a buck. So it's like, hey, get your first one under your belt and then improve from there, you know, get more mature, get bigger from there.
But is there like, if all of a sudden this big 2-year-old or big 3-year-old comes down the trail and a guy who's been there for several years shoots it, like, it is that, that's okay, right? I mean, is it okay? Or do you guys go, hey man, if you can't control that, then you're not going to be invited back? Or do you have those conversations?
We've had some of those tough conversations. A couple of years ago, there was what we were calling a triple beam buck. His right antler, I don't think it was a true third beam, but it like split at the pedicle and it looked like another beam. And we put him at 3.5. And I even had him walk in front of me. And it was a tough pass, but we had the conversation. You know, everybody agreed we were going to let it walk just to see what he'd turn into the next year. And a week later, one of the neighbors shot him.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And so
if we have those. If you've been there a hot minute, yeah, like, you've killed enough deer, we need to let those pass. Yeah, we have a couple guys who haven't killed a buck, so they'd probably get a flyer on that. And it's like, all right, time to get on board now, you know.
Yeah. If you want to be a part of this group, here are the expectations that we're trying to do for the ground in the surrounding areas. If you can abide by these rules, then you can continue to come do this. If you're just trying to get your buck, or in some states, what do they call that? A meat buck. I need my meat buck. Yeah. Right. But is it like green light on does? If you come, you can shoot does till you're blue in the face.
I mean, if you wanted to, our doe population's dropped a little bit over the years. We've noticed, we don't know how much of that's due to logging. We do know we have some extra neighbor pressure. So me and a couple of the other guys kind of realized that, and if other guys are wanting to fill the freezer with does, we'll kind of base what we take on that. Mm-hmm. You know, if everybody else takes one or two does, we won't take any. If nobody's taking does, we'll take one or two just to help, you know, with the herd and the population balance and whatnot. I don't have a problem sacrificing a doe tag. You know, I've got some other spots I can hit if I need some meat.
Yeah. Yeah. So does that then mean that you're okay with you're okay with not getting a deer because you've either, you're not shooting does because the population is low, or you aren't shooting a buck because, 3.5 year, you know, you've decided to shoot mature bucks?
Yeah, there have been years that happened. That's part of the reason we started doing some out of state hunts. Yeah, you know, we'll fill the freezer on some doe tags out of state.
Yeah.
Find some other ground, but yeah, I've eaten tag soup just because, you know, the right deer didn't walk in front, you know, the mature deer didn't walk in front, and I don't want to shoot that 3.5-year-old deer.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Well, man, this has been a really awesome conversation. I feel like the camp culture and needs to make a flare up back again into this community, because I think it's going to be one of the only anchors that is left to making hunting not become the quote unquote rich man sport, where everybody only wants big bucks and everybody wants ground to themselves and things like that. So I really do feel like the camp culture, the community culture is one of the only things, along with access, that is keeping the entire activity from becoming a rich man sport, right? And I feel like that's needed, because once we lose that and it becomes every man for themselves, then it doesn't turn out well, right? It just doesn't turn out well. And thank God for public land, right? For, you know, people still having access to that. So, Doug, man, really appreciate you coming on again. Great conversation. Thank you very much for your time. And I hope that your deer camp continues to thrive every single year. And you and your crew eat a lot of pork and beans and drink a lot of Busch Lights.
Thanks for having me. We'll definitely have enough Busch Lights this year.